Just over two decades ago, Edward St. John Gorey left us to follow the path taken by the doomed Gashly Crumb Tinies, the Whispering Gallery podcast on Instagram. His drawings didn't always spell out everything for us, which left us to draw our own conclusions about how the story was actually going down. And while there seems to be an immediate response to categorize his work as macabre, or macabre, however you choose to pronounce that, or horror, that may not be entirely the case. There is a very Edward Gorey mystery to be investigated. Were his drawings meant to be designated to and locked in the genre of horror? Or was there something else that he was shooting for? In the book Ascending Peculiarity, he states, quote, "Explaining something makes it go away, so to speak. What's important is left after you have explained everything else." Unquote. Edward left things not shown in his drawings, allowing us to draw our own conclusions. For example, in most of the Gashly Crumb Tinies illustrations, you see the problematic situation that the Tinies face, but mostly you don't see them experiencing their end. B is for Basil, assaulted by bears. And he is being surrounded by two very large bears. That is all you see. One of the bears is stepping closer. However, there is no mistaking R is for Rhoda, consumed by a fire, is in the middle of this horrific situation, arms up to shield her face. But, as Monty Python says,
"I'm not dead!"
"Yeah, he says he's not dead."
"Yes, he is."
"I'm not!"
Pass a half dozen blurry memories to sunset on Sunday nights when I was a kid. In the evening, the house would usually smell like fresh popcorn made in the hot air popper. From that point, I could count on catching up on homework or reading a book because it was my parents' TV night. They would be seated in front of the good TV, the color TV in the living room, like clockwork, to watch the news program 60 Minutes, and then to change the channel over to PBS when it was time to watch Masterpiece Theater or Masterpiece Mystery. These shows weren't exactly my thing, and I didn't stick around to find out what was interesting about them. However, more than once, I caught the opening to Masterpiece Mystery, showing detectives, a fainting woman, and a winking skeleton. It was animated, but seemed to be drawn in ink. This was my introduction to Edward Gorey's illustrations. This statement is said with an asterisk due to the animation compiled by PBS. In 1980, PBS launched Mystery, a weekly telecast of British mysteries and crime dramas. Quote, "Gorey created the animated introduction, gravestones crumbling, corpses sliding into fens, and it was almost as popular as the shows." Unquote. That was from The New Yorker, the article Edward Gorey's Enigmatic World by Joan Acosella, December 3rd, 2018. Behind the scenes, when Edward mapped out his ideas to give to PBS for the mystery program, he was told that it was too long to work. His drawings were given over to Eugene Fedorenko, Derek Lamb, and Janet Perlman to animate within the allotted time. The following is a recording of the mystery intro. This is posted on Oliver Muffin Sailor on YouTube.com with a note that says all title sequences from the PBS/WGBH show Mystery based upon the work of Edward Gorey animated by Derek Lamb, Eugene Fedorenko, and Janet Perlman.
Mystery is made possible by a grant from Mobile Corporation.
Welcome to the Whispering Gallery podcast of Spooky Art Tales. I'm Suzanne Nicolaisen, and we'll be finding our way to timeless places with baubles and bits from the Victorian and Edwardian periods, with strange creatures and unsettling situations, in search of the genre or genres most befitting Edward Gorey's pen and ink illustrations and stories. The Whispering Gallery is the place we visit to uncover spooky art stories. They could be about scary art, cursed paintings, ghosts, whatever may give you the chills, and sometimes they turn out to simply be fascinating stories. Thank you for joining me and being part of our little community of spooky art fans. We're coming together from places like India, Colombia, Australia, the US, Canada, and more. Thank you so much for listening. It's fun to be able to talk about these stories later with a friend or even to listen to them again on the stories you especially like. I'm continually dropping facts about what I'm researching to my husband Eric when I'm bursting with cool details to share. I hope you'll share the strange stories of the Whispering Gallery podcast with your friends, family, curator friends, art teachers, art students, coworkers, and fans of the paranormal. Let me know if you'd like me to put the podcast on YouTube. Just email me at whisperingcontact@gmail.com if it's any easier for you to get to the podcast that way. In Utah, the sun is low in the sky around 4 o'clock p.m. By 5 o'clock, I've turned on the lamps to chase away the long afternoon shadows. We'll soon be changing our clocks, which is undeniably goofy. And I've got a gaggle, does that work with squash or just geese, of pumpkins around that I want to draw, gathered from the grocery store pumpkin bins and pumpkin patches. I kind of shut down on the dog updates for a minute there. My husband and I foster dachshunds who are surrendered to a local rescue for many reasons. Sometimes it's age, sometimes health, among other reasons. During the summer, we lost our sweet foster, Marta, to bone cancer. That shut me down on talking about it. But here's a quick update. My husband and I both were bit this summer by different fosters, and that was weird. Shotzi is a mini dachshund and a smooth coat that is, I think, what they call a red color. And Boomer, a Shih Tzu Chihuahua that is blonde, are our two dogs that are adopted. They are great travel friends and very polite at the national parks, and this summer they rode around Yosemite in a bike trailer. Shotzi is sleeping in a pink, fluffy donut bed near my desk. Boomer is already back in his fluffy donut bed, and our current foster, Willie, is back in his little gray, fluffy donut bed under a blanket. So who is Willie? He's our latest foster, and he is a sweet boy. His personality is finally starting to show up. He was in very rough shape when he got here, but he's put on 2 pounds, and his skin looks so much better, and his fur seems to be growing back, just in time for winter. If you want to follow how the dachshunds are being helped, and how they're doing, follow the Dachshund Rescue of Utah on Facebook or Instagram. It's almost Halloween. Are you ready to get to the spooky stuff? Bring it, you say? The Very Gory Mystery itself isn't spooky, wah, wah, but his art sure can be. Grab a warm beverage with pumpkin spice We've actually been teasing about a feature on John Oliver of newscasters saying, "It's fall, y'all. Whatever beverage you'd like, if you have a warm blanket or sweater, just if you can get cozy for a minute to listen while we explore the very gory mystery." As we peel back the page on this story, what does Victorian mean? Besides the time period way back when, or a beautiful magazine with lavish photography depicting the style from the era? Why the name Victoria? The time period is the actual reign of the Queen of England, Queen Victoria, who reigned between 1837 and 1901. Why mention Edwardian? That's next up in line with King Edward VII, who reigned between 1901 and 1910, in what is now known as the Edwardian era. Edward Gorey's beard was considered Edwardian, which, from what I can tell, was kept shorter than the beards during the Victorian era. And it's been a while since I've had a joke, so I've got one. What is a beard's favorite nut? Mustachios! Thanks to KIDADL.com. Now, to quote Kate Summerskill, who's quoting historian Anthony S. Wool in Wikipedia, quote, "The English home closed up and darkened over the decade, 1850s. The cult of domesticity matched by a cult of privacy. Bourgeois existence was a world of interior space, heavily curtained off and wary of intrusion, and opened only by invitation for viewing on occasions such as parties or teas. The essential unknowability of each individual and society's collaboration in the maintenance of a facade behind which lurked innumerable mysteries were the themes which preoccupied many mid-century novelists." There's a photograph taken by Bill Cunningham, New York Times, showing Edward Gorey looking like a movie star. He's wearing aviators, sporting a fluffy knee-length raccoon fur coat, which he changed his mind about wearing later on, a winter scarf, and sneakers. Nearby, there's a couple who's been caught looking him over. I've also read that besides the sneakers he was wearing in that photo, that he wore Converse. The photo of Edward Gorey is on our Instagram feed at the Whispering Gallery podcast, and it is referenced. All our photos that are borrowed from other sources, it's referenced on the post where you can go look at it and where it's sourced from, as well as that this is all under fair use for education. Quote, "Gorey's long fingers positively droop under the weight of the brass donuts he wears. They come from lands of mystery like Egypt and Tibet. And he wears dozens of African necklaces of beads and shells, jingling and clunking like odd bells." Unquote. Mary Rourke in the National Observer, 1976. In watching videos of him on YouTube, he does seem to be a person who talked with his hands to emphasize this or that as he was speaking. The following quote is from The New Yorker, Edward Gorey's Enigmatic World. "A friend said that he looked like a cross between Hemingway and Santa Claus. His clothes were widely celebrated. He had a shifting wardrobe of at least a dozen fur coats. Some of them dyed electric colors, blue, green, yellow. Underneath, he tended to wear a turtleneck adorned with some sort of necklace, African beads, a lavalier on a string, and he often sported half a dozen rings. The outfit would be completed by blue jeans and, in almost all weather, low-top white sneakers, classic Keds, like those of the doubtful guest, and a full diapason vocal act, booming laughs, gut-drawn sighs. With this came some very camp speech." Of Agatha Christie's death, quote, "I thought, I can't go on," unquote. To ears today, such language may sound affected, but to Gorey, it seems to have been just a way of playing, having a good time. In Edward's drawings, there is a bearded man in a long raccoon coat who shows up again and again, and here and there. Coincidence? Now we're talking drawings, right? He's drawing. Okay, so here's some art. When did Edward start drawing? He was at a very young age, 2. And he was an avid reader, teaching himself to read at the age of 3. Are you thinking, nonsense? Well, he was considered to be a child prodigy and amassed a library during his life of 26,000 volumes. Sometimes I read that he used books as a shield, which I've done when taking the bus or train. And who did Edward Gorey like to read? Really, Agatha Christie was his favorite author. All right then, when was his call to start drawing and telling stories? Was it the semester he spent in art school at the Art Institute of Chicago? Or perhaps while studying French at Harvard University, graduating in 1950? Maybe it was his time in the Army at Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah. Or while he was working at Doubleday Anchor. He had plenty to draw from. Get it? Draw? Ha ha, yeah. To pause at the gateway to where he was going, I guess one way to put it would be that he started displaying art in 1939. While he was attending the Francis Parker School, he exhibited in annual art shows. This would be the 9th grade for him. His contributions made their way into school publications, and he helped with school events, and the Chicago newspaper is even listed as publishing his work. Here's a quote from Edward Gorey in Ascending Peculiarity. Quote, "My mission in life is to make everybody as uneasy as possible. I think we should all be as uneasy as possible, because that's what the world is like." Unquote. Here's another quote from Edward Gorey. "I really think I write about everyday life. I don't think I'm quite as odd as others say I am. Life is intrinsically, well, boring and dangerous at the same time. At any given moment, the floor may open up. Of course, it almost never does. That's what makes it so boring." Unquote. But he didn't just tell stories about creatures. In one tale, there was a time slip. In the epileptic bicycle, Emily and Hubert return home from their adventures only to discover an ancient obelisk raised to their memory 173 years ago. This was noted on page 37 of Gorey's World. Before we investigate the genre of his work, which many have labeled as horror and macabre, let's head into the darkness of the darkened theater. Edward Gorey spent years attending the New York City Ballet while they were under the direction of George Balanchine, who was the artistic director of the New York City Ballet for 35 years. Edward would walk to the ballet. I'd say Edward was more than just a fan of the ballet. I think he was pretty devoted to the work in particular of Balanchine. He attended every ballet for 25 years. He said, "I leave New York to work at Cape Cod the day the season closes, and I arrive back the day it opens." He had up to 6 cats at one time. He accumulated fine art while in New York. The art mainly had a Gothic vibe and was in black and white. These pieces were found via art dealers and at art flea markets. His art collection was given to the Wadsworth and Thinium Museum. Edward spent a lot of time at the ballet. That statement just doesn't cover it. Edward spent a lot of time at the ballet. That's still not right. I don't know anybody, nor have I heard of anybody, who has attended as many ballet performances as Edward Gorey. Quote, "He religiously attended the company's repertory seasons for over 30 years, would often hold court on the promenade critiquing the evening's ballets, but he had a special affection for the Nutcracker, a ballet where his attendance was a ritual. In fact, over 2 seasons, he attended 78 consecutive performances, 39 in one season alone." Unquote. That was a nycballet.com article, an interview with Mark Derry, Edward Gorey's biographer, by Elizabeth Donnelly, December 17th, 2018. So that's a lot, right? They say he would wear his sneakers and full-length raccoon fur coat. I think with that many performances to attend, he would have to be pretty practical with what he was wearing. I mean, if he's walking to the ballet, sneakers for traction, fur coat for warmth, in New York City in the snow and cold of winter. Quote, Gorey attended every performance of all Balanchine's ballets until the choreographer's death in 1983. Unquote. EdwardGorey.org. Gorey said that Balanchine was, quote, the ballet equivalent of Mozart. And in Gorey's world, they said, quote, affecting his observation of how people move on the stage and page. But there's more in the realm of the darkened theater. If you hear a little dog snoring, it is Shotzi sitting right next to my desk. In 1973, Gorey designed a production of Dracula. From EdwardGoreyHouse.org biography page, quote, in 1973, Gorey designed a production of Dracula for a small theater on Nantucket Island. It attracted considerable interest and in 1977 opened on Broadway as Edward Gorey's Dracula. A huge commercial success with extraordinary reviews. It garnered 2 Tony Awards, Best Revival and Best Costumes. Ran for almost 3 years and subsequently with road companies across America, in London, Australia, and elsewhere. Unquote. With his royalties from Dracula, Edward bought a gray house in Cape Cod in 1979, a 200-year-old house called the Elephant House. It had been a sea captain's home at 8 Strawberry Lane, Yarmouth Port, Massachusetts, USA, which he moved to after Balanchine's death. It was called the Elephant House because of the texture of the outside of the house and because at least one of the porcelain fixtures looked like an elephant. It was a toilet. He bought the house without even going inside. Later, he discovered it was previously occupied. Raccoons were living there, which I believe had something to do with him changing his mind about wearing raccoon coats. So while he accumulated things, they did not consider him a hoarder because there was a method. He had a lot of books, art, and cats. From interiorstylehunter.com, quote, the Japanese design aesthetic of wabi-sabi combines natural inspirations and a neutral palette with an acknowledgement of the beauty in the imperfection of daily life. Unlike minimalism, which seeks to streamline and eliminate clutter, wabi-sabi celebrates the knot in the wood or the wrinkle in the linen, unquote. He was creating even when relaxing, knitting dolls, working with cloth, ceramic, creating plays, design work for magazines. His studio was on the second floor and had a window. One of his favorite things to do was to look out of the window, and he had 6 to 7 cats while living there. Some of the cats would knock over the ink in his studio. There are ink stains still on the wall. Back to the raccoons who decided to nest in his house. This may have been when he changed his mind about wearing fur. He left his estate to the Edward Gorey Charitable Trust, which he established for the welfare of all living creatures, including not only cats, dogs, whales, and birds, but also bats, insects, and even invertebrates. This was listed at EdwardGoreyHouse.org. I'm going to read a quote to you from LiteraryTraveler.com, and this kind of takes us into a bit of paranormal, which the rest of the story hasn't even touched on, per se. Quote, such paranormal activity has also been rumored to have taken place even in Gorey's house, built some 200 years ago. Gorey's former home is now a haunted museum. though there have been no recorded sightings recently. I looked for and couldn't find the ghost stories to back this up, but, I mean, if somewhere is going to be haunted... Back on the trail of the genre of Edward's work, let's investigate. Let's look at a bit of storytelling that immediately resounded with me. I recognized it. My dad liked to memorize poetry, and this was one he knew. The following is from literature.stackexchange.com. It began like this, quote, "Ladies and jelly spoons," and continues, "One fine day in the middle of the night, two dead men got up to fight. Back to back they faced each other, drew their swords and shot each other. A paralyzed donkey passing by kicked a blind man in the eye, knocked him through a 9-inch wall into a dry ditch and drowned them all." Sounds strange, right? So many things that are backwards, they don't make sense. Still, it's a clue about the genre. I didn't understand until almost at the end of the book, Gory's Worlds, and I was taken by surprise by the simplicity in which it was shared, and the first time I'd heard about it. The genre is nonsense literature. And to use one of Gory's favorite phrases, the stories are, quote, "to die for," unquote. Wikipedia describes it as, quote, "Literary nonsense or nonsense literature is a broad categorization of literature that balances elements that make sense with some that do not, with the effect of subverting language, conventions, or logical reasoning. Even though the most well-known form of literary nonsense is nonsense verse, the genre is present in many forms of literature. The effect of nonsense is often caused by an excess of meaning rather than a lack of it. Its humor is derived from its nonsensical nature, rather than wit or the joke of a punchline," unquote. And the following is from Gory's Worlds. "The mystical and grotesque reappear in Gory's haunted world, where similar, implausible, nonsensical happenings feel dreamlike and surreal." It was his goal to create literary nonsense. Gory said, "Carroll and Lear are two of my favorite people. I'm an extravagant admirer of both of them." And he is also quoted as saying, "If you're doing nonsense, it has to be rather awful, because there'd be no point. I'm trying to think if there's sunny nonsense. Sunny, funny nonsense for children. Oh, how boring. Boring. Boring." As Schubert said, "There is no happy music." And that's true, there really isn't. And there's probably no happy nonsense either. Unquote. Maurice Sendak said, "Ted Gory is perfect for children, and that's the saddest thing of all, that his books weren't allowed to be published that way." Edward said, "If something doesn't creep into a drawing that you're not prepared for, you might as well not have drawn it." The New Yorker on Twitter posted, quote, "In his little books of sinister whimsy, Gory was true to his belief in leaving things out so that the reader's thoughts could flower," unquote. Edward Gory published about one book a year. Thank you so much for joining me to learn more about Edward Gory and his approach to nonsense literature, and his mysterious way of letting the reader's mind blossom to figure out what the art and words weren't telling them. It appears that there's a documentary about Edward Gory in the works. You can find interviews on YouTube, but I'm not sure about the release date. There's an interview with Neil Gaiman and with Edward Gory himself in some of the videos. If you'd like to get a free Cute Lucy skull pin, which is our logo on the podcast. It's a little enamel pin that is in the shape of a circle with a little skull in the middle. To get the free pin, please rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast feed. Simply email me at whisperingcontact@gmail.com with a screenshot, your name and address, and I'll get the pin in the mail to you. The pin is also available on Etsy. Etsy.com/shop/Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Nikolaisen, N-I-K-O-L-A-I-S-E-N, art for $6. But with your rating and review, you get the pen for free. Please note, I'll ship within the U.S., and if shipping is under $5, I'll ship it to you worldwide. Do you have any stories from your studio, art class, gallery, or museum? Or about art that falls into the realm of spooky art or art history stories, or art hauntings, or just art that kind of makes you cringe? Send your suggestions for stories or say hello at thewhisperingcontact@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to include a couple studio dog short stories too. It's always great to hear from you and makes my day. You can find The Whispering Gallery on Instagram, Facebook, and Buy Me a Coffee. And you can listen to us on most podcast feeds like Apple, Pandora, Spotify, or online at https://bit.ly/whisperinggallerypodcast. Please subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest spooky art stories. The writing and production of the Whispering Gallery podcast and copyright are held by Suzanne Nikolaisen. If you would like to support the podcast and the books I'm buying for research, please visit buymeacoffee.com/suznikart, which is SUZNIK art, to help cover the cost of books, audio, and our podcast host. Thank you. And look for us on Instagram at Whispering Gallery Podcast. That's the main feed that I use to put photos out on each episode. Thank you so very much for your company and for listening. And remember, keep your flashlight close and your spooky art stories closer while visiting the Whispering Gallery. Happy Halloween!